What happens when Eastern philosophy meets Western psychology and is shaped by a lifelong dedication to human and women's rights? In the work of Katherine Borgman Arboleda, it becomes a conscious coaching approach that is both insightful and deeply compassionate. Katherine blends ancient wisdom, modern psychology, and lived experience to help uncover limiting beliefs, shift old patterns, and support meaningful, lasting change. She offers a safe, supportive space for women, especially parents of children who are struggling to reconnect with their own inner wisdom and strengthen the relationships that matter most. Whether you're navigating parenting, personal growth, or simply longing for a more authentic and grounded life, this podcast will offer thoughtful conversations, practical tools, and gentle guidance to help you move forward with more clarity, confidence, and connection. We'll see you in the episode. Are you obsessed with the mystic? Are you looking for sisterhood? Are you ready to explore your inner magic? You've arrived, sister. Welcome home. I'm Maureen Spielman, and I started this show to highlight the intuitives, healers, and other courageous women I have met along my journey. Through amazing interviews, we go deep into the mystics and uncover the ways in which you can apply the knowledge and wisdom in your own life. We are all in this together. Sharing healing and joy in community is both my passion and my purpose. Here's today's conversation. Welcome back to Mystical Sisterhood. This is your host, Maureen Spielman. And today I'm joined by Katherine Borgman Arboleda of Collaborative Insights. And I'm deeply honored that you're here, Katherine. I was introduced to you through Terry Potter. And Terry was back with us very early on when the podcast started in episode 10. And that was called How to Parent the Young People of Today. And the funny thing about that is I think it stands strong as an episode, you know, and it's about 2 years old. The two of you collaborate on navigating the abyss, parenting alchemy for kids in crisis. And I want to say about you that you are a conscious coach, a conscious parenting coach. And you have this big, broad background too in supporting, partnering with large foundations and NGOs. And part of this big work, which you have under the umbrella really of transformation for the world. So you can kind of, maybe we'll jump in there, but first I want to welcome you here and say thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Irene. It's such a pleasure and honor to be with you today.
Well, you know, it was funny because for the listener, you know, a lot of our listeners are here every week. We've got new listeners all the time too, but you and I jumped on the call about 40 minutes ago, you know, seemingly to have a few words before we recorded, but that's how it goes. And I just want to say that when we're in conscious conversations where, you know, we're really delving into the meat of life in a way, and we're doing so with just curiosity and awareness, that so much can open up. And I feel like I hold a kinship with you. I believe probably not only that we've both gone through Dr. Shefali's trainings, you've done Gabor Mate's trainings, but just in bringing the work that we see as really worthy to the world. So, you know, I was wondering, with your background of working in it seems like a completely different field, but I don't think it is, because I think that we have all these through lines in the work that we do. But can you tell us how you started sort of your professional career and how you got into the work of working with the organizations that you did and what that work kind of looked like?
So I started probably 25 years ago working in social justice, human rights, international development, around basically bringing people together and helping them learn about what was working in terms of their activism, in terms of their social change work. And so helping people see, develop strategies based on their collective wisdom. And it was something I did increasingly. I saw the value. We sort of started out with doing more as, you know, report writing, and it was more around accountability, and then moved towards really seeing the value of having different people at the table from different backgrounds, not just the decision makers, but really very much the people that were supposed to be benefited by whatever program this was. And of course, that was challenging and had sometimes worked well and sometimes was, you know, difficult, because I think, as we were talking about earlier, often in development or human rights, the people that are funding the work don't really want to take a look. They don't want to look at themselves. They don't want to hold up a mirror to themselves. They would prefer to, you know, see what everyone else is doing right or wrong. And so I think through that process, I mean, there's been different avenues that have brought me to where I am. But I think one of the things is in that work was really seeing how important it was for us to look at ourselves and to see what is our role in changing the world and how are we contributing to it? And it's, you know, how much of this is about how we've been conditioned and what we're afraid of. And, you know, I think, you know, that we things that we've talked about is, you know, how can we move this to have another conversation around change where it's not about fear, but about, you know, love and unity. And I know those words sound very, you know, esoteric, but I do think there is, I think there's a movement in that direction. And I think that we know, as we can see everything that's going on around us now, is that we have to shift.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how, that's what I was doing for many years. And I still do some of that work. And I particularly love bringing women together. And I love the conversations that the solidarity and the transformative power of bringing women together to be vulnerable and to share what's on their mind and to learn together. So yes, I'll stop there. Yeah.
Beautiful. So there was a long runway of watching systems and how they operated. I think that's an interesting part of it, right? Because I feel like the work that you're doing, it's currently, you know, again, bringing women, I don't know about families to the table, but having conversations that have been relegated to the side that not everybody is willing to get into, right? Is like, there's something, there's some archetype in it of willing to look at what's going on and seeing where change is being called for. So I love that the work that you did for so many years was centered around like, okay, like I'm watching and seeing what's happening. I'm seeing what's not happening. And this experience of maybe even before you were calling yourself a coach or a guide or a mentor, you were doing the work anyway. So that's a fact. I mean, I just think for anyone listening and saying like, oh, this is my former career, there's something in that that is feeding. And especially if anyone out there is listening, contemplating like they're in a neutral middle zone of like, what's my next, right? So there's so many different spaces of value in that. And I love what you're saying too about when women come to the table, when women come to the circle, this is what I see occurring. And, you know, maybe that's another segue into what do you see occurring when that invitation is made?
Yeah, no, I love, just wanted to piggyback on what you said about systems. And I think that's so important. You know, when we're looking at systems, we're looking at change, whether any kind of change in families, in our lives, in countries, in regions, you know, it's what are we not looking, what are we not seeing? You know, what are we afraid to look at? What are we resisting looking at? And that's often needs to guide us, right?
Yes.
We need to draw our attention to those places. I think bringing women together. I mean, I know a lot of the women I'm bringing together are women that are moms, right? That are also struggling with their kids and struggling for answers and looking for support and solidarity. And so I think there's a value to individual coaching. And I think some of that work can and needs to happen individually, but it's so important, I think, that we see ourselves as not as being alone, but as really being connected, and to see that a lot of the struggles that we face are so similar.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think particularly when our kids are struggling to whatever degree, right? I mean, even if they're resisting going to school, or if they're anxious, or if they're struggling with substance misuse and doing things that are more extreme, there's still, we tend to feel so alone.
Yeah. And so isolated.
Right? So isolated. Yeah. So isolated. And as women, so much of what we do is, so much of our mothering is tied up in our identity. Of, you know, are we successful? Are we good, even good people? Mm-hmm. And if your kid is, you know, it's one of the sayings that I have always loved from Shefali that she shared. I mean, I don't think she coined it, but she always shared with us, is that you're only as happy as your least happy kid. And that's for mothers. I don't think fathers are sometimes, but often that's not something that they would identify with so much.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, coming together and also together finding a place where you have the right to joy. And no matter how hard things are, you know, you have, it's your birthright. Mm-hmm. And it's not only your, and it's not only important for you, but it's also important for your kids.
Yeah.
To see you being able to have a life which feeds you and find meaning in your life. And because that's something that then you're their model, right?
Yeah. And I love, I'll say, you know, what you've been putting out to Catherine, and maybe even before I get to that, because the work that you're putting out and offering right now is very beautiful. And I want to touch upon some of the resources, but what was it about you that had you kind of move into a new direction in terms of like, oh, you know, maybe I'm being called, maybe my purpose is going to lie somewhere else, at least for the, you know, coming years, the coming decade. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
I'm curious.
I mean, I think since I was very young, I was always interested in the metaphysical and always kind of searching, seeking. And I think, as happens to a lot of women in your 40s, and there's, it's so interesting, there's a lot of research that supports this. It's like there's a you know, you have a different, the veil comes off all of a sudden. And you start seeing things, you start seeing, asking questions that you weren't asking before. And I think I felt that while I value the work I was doing, I was feeling called in some other direction. And so I started looking, and I think that dovetailed with my daughter's struggles, which started around when she was around 10 or 11, and depression, anxiety, self-harm, which then spiraled, you know, into a lot of other really challenging behaviors through the years. But I think through that too, I thought I would implode if I didn't find some other way of seeing what was going on, some other lens into what was happening with my child, with my family, with myself. And so then that's how I came across Dr. Shefali and started, as you did, started learning from her and got certified. And then that led to Dr. Gabor Mate. And then just, I continue, you know, as a lot of us do, looking, learning from teachers, clarifying what I really think is the way forward.
Yes. And I want to say, let's just take a moment for those who might not be familiar, because, you know, I've had, well, you know, maybe not talking about conscious parenting, there's been guests who we studied with, you know, alongside us for Dr. Shefali Sabari's program. But, you know, when we talk, we can throw a label out there like conscious parenting. And it's like you and I probably could dovetail on quite a few of the things. I think before we recorded, you said, hey, Maureen, there's really like maybe 5, 6, 7, like core components of so many of the different offerings out there today. But, you know, I know you say right on your website, that part of Dr. Shefali's program that she will say Eastern philosophy, you know, married with Western psychology. And I think, and then, you know, that's sort of a masthead of what it was, but really this idea that as parents, as mothers, fathers, caregivers, that, you know, we've been really conditioned to look outside of ourselves for the answers. And I think that the reason for any listener that hears someone like you or me say like, wow, that was the beginning of a very deep dive into ourselves. And for a lot of us, I think we can say was, even if you had done therapy for years, like I had, it was like, whoa, wait a minute. This is radically different in terms of the call inward. And so can you talk about that a little bit and what it meant to you? Because I think that it's important for a listener to understand that this is, oh, you just don't go through training and you just don't, right? It is deeply meaningful, and it's being, you know, carried forward for us to share with others.
So yeah, it's a wonderful question. And I think Dr. Shefali is doing this, and there are other teachers too that are helping people move into understanding what is consciousness and how we can be more conscious and act with more consciousness. And I think with Shefali, I think it's this work of turning the mirror on yourself. And it's one of the things too that I've been doing some workshops lately, and it's one of the key learnings is I have a picture of myself looking in the mirror. And I think so much is we're, you know, trying to fix what's around us always. And I think it's really taking a look, but in a look with love and compassion, like a deep look at ourselves and looking at what our fears are, what our how we were conditioned, what our values are, what our beliefs are. And it's a lot of work in the subconscious.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Because I mean, I think, you know, there's like 95% of we're living in the subconscious, right?
Yeah.
There's so much happening there. And there's just a very small percentage where we're actually aware and alert and present with what's going on.
Yes. I always love that iceberg illustration where it's just like the tip of the iceberg is above the water. And then, like you're saying, that 95% is below. And that's what we're operating from.
That's what we're operating from. And we need to take a look and to really understand what's going on there to start. I mean, it's lifelong work.
Yes.
Right. But you're shining more and more light into that part of yourself
and
learning the tools.
And I was going to say too, with your extensive training with Dr. Gabor Mate, is that part of it where I think this is when I look at my own journey is the compassion, the kindness, the
so
softness.
Important.
And, you know, I may have said on here, I don't know, but, you know, even the word compassion sometimes can feel like it's miles and miles and miles away. But maybe we talked about that when we first met, just like, okay, then how can we be kinder? How can we be softer? How can we be gentler? Like those words that a little more accessible. But I think when we look at all those, the ways we've been conditioned, our belief systems, the ways that we have behaved in our homes that we feel ashamed of, it's like we take it all and we just bathe it in compassion because there's nothing wrong to any part of it. And I feel like that compassionate lens is just this huge key to unlock our growth and the change that will occur.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that is the key, right? Because we can't show compassion if we can't feel compassion for ourselves.
Yeah. I was going to say, what does it look like when we're not giving compassion to ourselves?
Yeah. And I was going to say, I think, and it's so clear to us, because I've seen the shift in myself. And I often will stop and say, when I'm struggling with something, like, what is the compassionate version of Catherine? What would she do?
Yeah.
Or what would the version of Catherine that loves herself do?
Beautiful question.
You know, and it just like clarifies things for me. But I, you know, when you're talking to people that aren't necessarily on this path or, you know, just starting to develop more self-awareness and curiosity about themselves and what's going on in their lives, I think that idea of compassion and self-compassion, it seems kind of like a cop-out or something like really kind of woo-woo or hippie and just not. But if you look at the science underneath it, I mean, if you look, for example, with kids and learning, if you don't show compassion, if they don't feel safe and if they don't feel cared for, then they can't learn.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the same way. If we can't show ourselves compassion, we can't get better.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. We can't learn. We can't grow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much judgment that we have towards ourselves. I mean, not to mention, you know, the families, the systems and everything else that brings so much judgment to us as women, if we're not X, Y, and Z, but it's such an internalized voice.
Yeah.
It's such an internalized voice. And I think just being aware of that voice, you know, and I was reading somewhere, it's like when you, and where are those thoughts when they come in? I'm like, I'm just going to throw those in the garbage.
Right.
Or some word, you know, change or, you know, something that will bring you to a different place because it's so, so important to be able to do that.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And I think the question that was coming to my mind is sort of, what do we do when life gets hard? What's our default? What's our go-to? And I know the younger Maureen was frustrated, I was overwhelmed, I would act out, I would act inward, and I would do all the things to it. And what it served to do was to keep me very stuck in one place. And I really think that although I had done traditional healing, you know, for many years, it wasn't until I started this work that, and I began to see many different angles and possibilities. And that's what I love this podcast too, because so many women coming on, so many ideas being offered that open up our perspectives. And we can see, we can almost like see them all like this big menu, right? And the one that was the former me that was so hard on myself, that archetype for women is becoming outdated. It's, we want to replace it with a new operating system that is fully in support of ourselves. And so that's why, I'm, you know, we talked about that word, like being passionate for this work. And that's why we are, so many new operating systems are being called for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the question that you posed or yourself, or, you know, around what is it, what did the old Marine look like when before she could feel compassion for herself? And I could say the same thing. I remember, and in particularly in regards to parenting, I mean, I was so hard on myself and I didn't even realize it. But I was like, I'm not doing, you know, I could think back to boy, I'm not doing this right. I'm not what they need. So many, like a whole line of critique for myself.
Yeah.
And then what would happen is then, you know, I mean, we know what happens in our brain, right? I mean, you start going to fight, flight, freeze, you close down, you can't be creative, you can't connect, you can't learn, you can't grow. I mean, there's a biological response to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I remember that, and I would feel angry when I was with my kids because I was feeling so bad about myself, even though I didn't realize that was happening, because I could see it in someone else. I couldn't see it in myself. The charge I was bringing to those connections with them was nothing to do with them or the situation at hand. It was all to do with how I was feeling because of these false beliefs about myself and this lack of compassion.
Mm-hmm. That were seated in your own childhood, I would imagine.
Yeah, my own childhood and conditioning and, you know, all of that. So,
and I think the interesting thing about parenting is, you know, I think you and I share children of around the same age. As in, you know, 2000, when I had my first, there were a few books out there. There were a few resources, but by and large, even if there are many, many, many resources now, we do go into parenting without a roadmap. And when I always love Dr. Shefali and, you know, the selling of the fantasy of it all. And just to go to that idea of children are facing so many things that we never faced, which means we as parents are facing so many things that parents have really never faced to the degree we are. And so, you know, if you gave a message right now in the middle of the podcast to any parent who is going through hard times and struggles and their child is concurrently, you know, what kind of message would you send?
I think I would say, one, to really trust your instincts, really trust your instincts and do whatever you need to do to get in touch with yourself. Because I think we're told that we don't know enough, that there's so many different experts that are telling us that our kid, that we're doing things wrong, that our kids are doing things wrong, or so many diagnoses. So I would really trust your instincts and also realize that your kid is not broken. So those are two, I would really, because I think those are two themes that are so, if you're in any of the groups of parents with struggling kids, or, you know, it's always like, who has the expert, who has, and I understand why.
Yeah.
But you know, but we're totally disempowered as parents.
Yeah.
When our kids are struggling. Yeah.
Well, that's, and you, that's what I was, before we recorded, just saying the part about the deep training that you have had around this, that you share the podcast with Terry Potter. I love her work too, because she's venturing into this work.
And, absolutely.
But the trust instincts, and then these children are not here to fix. So embedded in that is, okay, parent, this is your teacher. And they are right in front of you most of the time in our house, sometimes out of our house now. But so this is a multi-layered process of trusting instincts. But I think it's really important, because there were certain things on, you know, my parenting journey where I just knew not to do something that I was being told to do, maybe give a label to something. And I'm like, I had an inherent knowing, like, or an instinct, like, that might be more damaging than it is helpful. Your second point, Catherine, about there's nothing to fix here. And they're right where they need to be, even on their soul's journey, on our soul's journey, which is another kind of a universal principle we're kind of being held by. But starting with those two is incredibly helpful to kind of, would you say, to kind of like write ourselves, to kind of understand?
I think to write ourselves, and I think to come back to those as sort of touchstones, you know? And that doesn't mean to say that you don't take action when you need to. You know, if your kid is running out from a bus, you're going to take action and to save them, right? But those moments are few and far between when that's really needed. And, you know, and I love what you said about really looking at these situations, and it's related to this, and what's going on with our kids. I mean, and this is part of our path as becoming more conscious, right? Is these, our kids, because they're so close to us, are our greatest teachers, particularly when they're struggling. And but anyway, you know, they're really, you learn, if you choose to, it can be your greatest evolutionary catalyst. And really looking at the situation is like, what is there here for me to learn? You know, what am I not looking at? What am I resisting? And I think that that's, if you can come back to that, feedback over and over, I think that's so important. And it's what sustained me over through incredibly difficult situations.
You know, before we recorded too, you were talking about that idea of really taking a look at our fears. And we know that our fears can be above the surface, but they can be really running the show in that subconscious. But you were saying that you have an intrigue around what fears live within me. And I think anyone who is parenting a child going through difficulty is that there can be fear in the moment. Like I'll just say from my own experience of, and like you're saying, like those moments, those really escalated ones where you have to step in, they're kind of, you're kind of like, those are the mountaintops. They're like, they're actually, and you're speaking from experience. They're not, you know, every single day, but I was going to say the fears can continue and sometimes, like, I don't know what you think the relationship is between fear and worry. Are they the same things? Because I can find myself in worry. And that's just like, that's also like a feeling that's like, it's very anxiety ridden. I have to pattern interrupt when I have had those times in my life.
I mean, I think worry, I think anxiety, and I think underneath that, there's some of these deeper fears that are fed by these beliefs, you know, and I think a lot of it is around control, this sense that we can control the future. And so if I can just figure it out what to do, or figure out this magic, you know, recipe, then things will be better. And so we're trying to figure it out.
Yes. And our mind, our mind is really trying to figure that out. So, you know, part of when you work with parents, what are you seeing as something that brings great comfort? Is it working within groups? Is it, you know, what is going on where you're seeing like, okay, this is providing space for healing?
Yeah, I think sometimes I think both. I think I particularly think groups, because often when parents are struggling, they have a therapist or someone they see, and that can be helpful, right? And often, sometimes it depends on the therapist, but I do think that there's a real value to this sort of conscious coaching where you can see what's happening in this greater context of your life and what it means for you, and understand, because of the fear, understand what's driving the fear and work with the fear. And often I think when parents, you know, your more traditional counseling or therapy, they're not getting that, you know, but I know, because I went through it and I had all sorts of there, and that was not something that was ever touched on. I do think too, that working in groups, as I mentioned earlier, is particularly transformative. There's something that happens when people come together, and the learning and the energy and the love is shared and the care for each other. I think it's really sustains parents or moms through really difficult times. And I think also sharing your story and having people hear it, not just one, but hearing a number of other moms hearing the story and being able to relate to it and feeling with you is really critical.
That's beautiful.
I think it's like, yeah. So I think those things are what I've seen to be particularly important. So those are the containers in this journey. I think often, you know, again, we know it's often like, let's find the kid a coach, let's find the kid a therapist, let's find a kid a group, let's find, which is great, you know. But to be honest, and it was funny because there was a post today in one of the groups I'm in around, and the conversation, the main theme was really like, what does it take to make kids change?
Mm-hmm.
What does it take to make kids change? And, you know, I was thinking that's going to be that's just a long post. I mean, it's because they're so young mm-hmm. and think how hard it is for us to change. And we're, you know, middle-aged. And I think often one thing we forget about is this idea of sovereignty or agency. And kids, anyone needs to have agency in your growth.
Yeah.
It can't be forced on anyone at any age.
No. And that
can't be forced.
I think that energetically kids feel that, whether they're younger, they're mid-teens, they're early 20s, whatever it is, if we're holding an agenda and we've got an idea. And you know, I check myself on those things because I'm decent at it, but again, pulling back to where are we now? What do I need in the moment? What does this other person need in the moment? And so much of rebuilding what was not there, because if I look at the way who Maureen was when I raised my early kids, I think that, you know, when my kids were younger, I wish that I would have known, and also blessed that I didn't, right? Because this is how we learn, but just creating spaciousness around listening alone. And how something like sacred listening and giving a wide berth of not having an agenda can create these foundations for change. And will you speak a little bit to how that's a practice and how let's also seed the possibilities and the hopefulness around this, because it doesn't happen overnight, because we're retraining ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we're giving our loved ones a new experience, which they have to get used to, right? Especially coming from us.
I think that's really important. This idea of learning to accompany our kids and what that looks like, right? This idea of accompaniment. And I think when I was mentioning this post and how there's such a desire to find, to understand, to figure out how to fix our kids, what are the magic resources, you know? What are the medications, right? We know, you know, and so I think understandable, and there are resources we can provide for our kids, and of course, but I think the only thing that we can control, only thing that we are ourselves. And so it's so important to shift that energy from trying to fix them to working on ourselves. And that is that very linked to what you were saying about creating space, because until we are able to be present with ourselves and do some of that work around understanding our fears and shifting those beliefs and developing a lens to see our kids through more through abundance and through their essence. And until we can do that, until we've done that work, it's really hard to do that, right? And I think what you're saying is so much of the connection with them is coming to them, as you're saying, without an agenda, without judgment. Because when they can feel it, even if we don't say it, it's energetic. Even if we're there and we just peek in their room, right? And we really are, the agenda is like, are they doing their homework? They sense it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if we can shift that, and our goal is like, you know, I'm not saying homework isn't important, doesn't have a role, et cetera, but my priority with my child is connection. And I go into the room, you know, go in to connect, which is with curiosity, which is with openness, with maybe just listening, or maybe just, it's just like saying, hi, just wanted to say, I hope everything's going well. I'm doing X, Y, and Z if you want to join me. But just that spaciousness and kind of removing that need to help orchestrate some outcome.
Yeah.
Because really so much of our worries and our fears and our anxiety is about, again, like orchestrating some outcome so that I will feel okay and my kid will be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Which is mostly based in false assumptions, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't know what's happening in this. Anyway, let's put aside the crazy world and what's happening, but we don't know what they need. We don't know what experience or what person they'll come into contact with or what resource that will bring them on the path that will give them the life that they're meant to have.
Yeah, and I think that's the beautiful part of this work too, is holding that light up. I do believe when we work on ourselves and we kind of free ourselves of the constraints from, you know, our upbringing, ancestrally, whatever we're carrying, then we can carry the light. And that's much needed in these times. And so that's why the work of fortifying my inner world, my, you know, pillar of how do I become centered? How do I maintain calm? How do I do all these things? It matters. It matters greatly. And it matters when we do this work on ourselves, with our children, with our partner, it feeds the collective. And I love this conversation just because all of this work is doing that right now. And it can be very invisible work.
I think it completely is. And I think, I mean, we're obviously in this algorithm of we're getting a lot of connection with like-minded people and kindred spirits, but you can see in all these different sectors where what was marginalized and sidelined in terms of conversations as these are making their way and they're giving more legitimacy.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And I think that's really powerful. And in such a short time, Maureen.
Yes. And the other thing when you were sharing, I was thinking of was like how I often think about, and I think many parents who are really going through it, we're living in unprecedented times. And that is not, you know, whether we name, you know, social media and devices and the pandemic and the world at large right now, these things are happening. And so I think as parents, it's almost a beautiful call that there's a new type of guidance emerging. And we are on the forefront of it. Like we get, sometimes I hear like, if you chose to take a body right now, you know, you're lucky to be on earth living. And people would say like, that's crazy. Of course I'm not. But there is something there that's like, no, this is really exciting. We are on a forefront of parents in a generation and our kids are speaking loudly. You might have thoughts about that, but the parents are, we might be saying like, why is this getting so loud? It hurts my ears. You know, what my children or the children of earth are coming forward with, but it's a call for us to rise higher. And so we know we're on this threshold of change.
I absolutely agree. I mean, we've seen it coming for some time, obviously, but I think it's really escalated. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if, you know, this idea of conscious parenting, and you said, you know, it's true, you weren't given a roadmap to parent, but there was nothing on this 10 years ago.
Mm-mm, no.
You know,
no.
There was very little connecting the consciousness to parenting.
Yes.
There was, right?
Yes, yes.
And even that has escalated so much. But I think what you're saying about kids is so true. I mean, I think you can see that in the crisis of mental health and of addiction and of, I mean, it's young people saying this world is broke. There's something broken and I'm not going to fit myself into a broken world.
Right, right. Yes.
I'm not going to fit myself into a broken world. And they have ideas and there have visions of a world and a ways of living that we can't conceive.
Yeah. And to your point, Catherine, when I like to look at things like the decades, right? And when I think because we're both trained under Dr. Shefali or with mm-hmm. her, I think she kind of hit her stride in 2013 when Oprah Winfrey had her on and then her work mm-hmm. started to really get out there. But I love that timing because that timing was so darn perfect for what was to come. And so mm-hmm. it's like we're on the edge of this wave that is growing and we are disseminating this information. We're getting it out there. And when you talk about the children and fitting into this kind of broken system in many ways, it's like they are pioneers too. And so we are all brave pioneers right now, which I'm loving this
yeah.
theme. Because even though, you know, that might be hard to embrace or that might be audacious to say, that's what I'm seeing and that's what I'm feeling. And
yeah, no, I agree. I agree with everything you're saying. Absolutely. And I think, you know, and it's a time when you can be really disheartened because, you know, and scared for yourself, scared for your kids. But I think the way I see this is that things are coming out to the air that need to heal. And it is painful to watch. And I'm not saying, I mean, I'm obviously speaking from a position of, in many ways, of privilege. I'm not on the front lines of those that are most vulnerable and that are really living this day to day, sort of the consequences of, you know, this kind of unraveling. But I do think there are so many doors being opened for new visions of the world. And one of the common denominators is great. Yeah, one of the common denominators of a lot of these kids that are really struggling with their mental health and addiction is that they're incredibly sensitive. I mean, it's across the board. It's like these kids, it's they come into the world and they feel the world and to it with an intensity that other kids don't. And they feel the pain of this world in a way that other kids don't. But I think in a lot of ways, these kids, with their sensitivity and with their vision, are kind of going to be leading the way forward. And so I think sometimes, you know, we look at these kids that have struggled so much and we feel, you know, guilty and we feel sad for them and we feel, you know, we feel their pain. But I think in a lot of ways, for many of them, this will have been a process and they need to go through in order to take this role, helping to move the world forward in the future.
Yeah, I love that you bring that up, the sensitivity and the deep, deep empathy that these children are feeling. And it reminds me of one of my guests, Dr. Therese Rowley. She's a Chicago-based healer, intuitive, runs Conscious Business Networks, but has a real interest in children who are neurodivergent. And I think she's begun to call them multisensory, which is very interesting in what you're saying about, you know, when we're deeply sensitive, that's a sense, that's one of our senses that's on. It's a superpower, right? It really is. It's the both and, like going to the parent first and giving them tools to kind of center, to take care of themselves, to begin to turn that mirror on themselves, but also giving our children tools, and whether they're energetic tools or emotional tools or whatever it is, to help them guide themselves through the world with, I think you used the word companion. And I love it because Dr. Rowley has begun a group for parents of neurodivergent children, but she always says that the parents are super parents. And I think it's her way of saying, I see you. I see all the work that you're doing. And, you know, maybe a lot of kids these days would fall under these sort of like categories, but what you're saying is really important. But I love this shout out to the appreciation for parents, mothers going through this and parenting in a new world, because yes, we are changing. We are at that forefront, and it's painful and it's hard and it's the long game and all the things. So.
Yeah, the long game. I think that's something too that's so important is that we want, you know, we want a quick fix. We want to find quick answers, and it's a long game.
And
It
it's
is.
interesting now too, because I'm here outside of Chicago, and my two children who have graduated from college are home. And my son was home from college this weekend. I've got three, and I've got a full house. And, you know, so much is put on, like, what do? You know, they're going to be out the door at 21. And that's definitely the paradigm I grew up underneath. But it's like a complete reorienting of, like, hey, this is all okay. And it's not just okay. It can be really great, even when it's not, right? And so I love what you're sharing today. Just that part of, like, I was thinking earlier when you were speaking of, it's the deep healing work, and it's holding the light, and it's holding the joy, and it's bringing these things into our lives, getting us back out into nature, in touch with what really matters. And I think that all the times that we've been going through, say the last 5 years, say the last 10 years, 15, is that it's bringing us back to what really matters. And before we recorded, you said today, Maureen, when you're 90, what's going to have mattered? And for me, I can say it's the deep connections, it's conversations like these, it's knowing I ushered myself through the world with a lot of grace and compassion. It's really the simplest things in life. How about you? When you're 90,
I'd love that question. Yeah, I think, yeah, as I was saying, yeah, I think it's absolutely is having the courage to serve and how I've been called to and trusting my instincts. I think it's connecting, being open to connecting with everyone that comes, you know, along my path. And really, I think knowing that those connections are a priority.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Right? Knowing and curating those connections, right?
And moving into a really feminine way of being with that, that we're, it's not because you have to do this, you have to prove, you have to be anything. It's a drive that comes from inside. And that's also, I believe, channeling through you. You know, while we round out our conversation today, I mean, there's obviously so much to say. I was going to just read a few of the titles of Navigating the Abyss, The Parenting Alchemy for Kids in Crisis, that you, the podcast you do with Terry Potter. And I just was going to share with the audience a few of the titles. And I've got When Your Teen Pushes You Away, Finding Balance in Difficult Conversations. Another one is Loving Through Substance Misuse, A Mother's Journey of Radical Acceptance. And What About My Partner? So I just chose those of the 10 that you've so far produced. I'm going to encourage the listeners to go to the podcast. It's great. Also, Catherine, I want you to share your website. And the other day I downloaded your resource for conscious parenting for teens who are struggling. You can say the title of it. But when I looked through the resource, I really want to encourage all parents here today. If you're a grandmother and you're listening and you have, you know, your son or daughter parenting, I really want to see a resource like this get into a lot of people's hands, because when I was looking at it, yes, it is for parents who you've named in the title, but it's for all parents. It is for all parents. And it is for parents of no matter if we have a 2-year-old or a 22-year-old, it doesn't matter. It's a way of life captured under a title. But how would a listener find that resource? And why did you choose to say Collaborative Insights?
Oh, Collaborative Insights. I chose that title because I always feel like wisdom is generated collectively. And so that's how I sort of envisioned working with people. I don't see myself, even though we've studied a lot, and I see it as, I see myself, I learn as much from people that I work with as I teach. I know that. And the resource is, well, we can put a link in your show notes.
Sure.
Because it's not on my website.
Yes, we'll put the link in the show notes.
So good. I should put it up. But I was just emailing it to people and I had the link there. So yeah, but I need to do that.
That's great. We'll put the resource in the show notes. And I just love it because, you know, I had posted the other day on my Instagram stories and I feel like I had said in a sea of resources, it's just nice to have one that's vetted and that you could sit down with your partner, if you have one partner in parenting, your spouse, and just kind of, or meet with a girlfriend, or what do you think about these things? Because when you said earlier too, about, you know, when you talked about going into the child's room with the homework example and, you know, the different ways we might come at that, I think an older paradigm way, I know for myself, would be like, God, you know, call a friend, but say, God dang it, can you believe this happens? She, blah, 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 whatever it is. And that's all great. But I think a former me was like, they, and I couldn't see myself in it. And I think even if you take a phone conversation like that, like, oh, how can that look different? Oh, what did it, you know, if we began as women, you know, fellow parents and fellow friends, whatever it is, to say, hey, do you want to have a conscious conversation and aware, whatever we call it, we don't have to have lofty words, but like, oh, what do you think's in it for you? Or how can you give yourself compassion around what's coming up? Or what, like new questions, we're seeding new questions.
I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I think, yeah, absolutely. I could seed myself, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
With my older, I was always trying to make her read all the time. And I'm like, oh, she won't read enough. She won't, like, what's wrong with the school? You know, that was a common. Right. And now I know, you know, I have a 15-year-old at home now. So I know when I feel frustrated because maybe she's not doing X, Y, or Z or whatever, you know, the first thing I'm doing is like going back, okay, what am I making this mean?
Great question.
about her, about myself. And so I think, you know, when I, and I, with my friends, not all of them, which are on this path by any means, I often ask them that. So what, you know, what are you making this mean? And at first it's like, well, and then they start thinking, you know, I, maybe it's because I'm a, you know, I'm afraid that, you know, when it gets down to that, she'll never have a successful life, or she'll be alone, or whatever, or that I am not doing enough and I'm a crappy mother, you know? And when you can shift, when you can shift that, then you can come to the situation at hand with another lens that's going to be a lot more productive. So I love that you said, like, having different kinds of conversations around parenting.
It's such a nice vision. So, Catherine, will lead people to your website and put in the show notes your resource. And I know you're often providing workshops for people. So just getting on someone's email list can really be beneficial because I'm on yours now. And just, you know, you shared even recently, I'll touch upon before we go, is just like how even the silence in the meeting you just held, and, you know, women holding each other and knowing that you're understood and you're not alone. Those can just provide such comfort to know that we're cared for and that we're not alone. We really are not.
Yeah, we're not alone. And I think it provides comfort and it brings creativity into and a new energy into how we engage.
Yeah, and how we engage with each other, because I know that even if I lead with this is what's happening, that I'm often met with a fixer energy. And the fixer energy come from, I think we identify that as a male energy. And it is probably more of a male energy that we've just picked up from society and culture. And there's so many themes that we've talked about today, but this like moving into this feminine way. And it's this is very strong. And I think along the way, as women, we're learning to use our voices in ways we never have. And many of us were greatly quieted, like myself and my in youth. And so, you know, there's still the voices that come up like, oh, you haven't addressed that. You haven't talked about that. You haven't addressed that head on. You haven't almost, I'm going to say, hit that hard enough. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, that's a lot of damaging self-talk there. But at the same time, you know, there is a call like, oh, how can I say what I want to say? How can I share without
Love that.
being feeling like I'm going to offend somebody or right? And so there's this subtle art in all of it.
Yeah, and I love, I mean, it makes me think, because how are we embodying this new divine feminine, right? And bringing it to the world. And I think, you know, for me, it was, again, I think a different message than what you were receiving, but it was like, if you can't bring enough male energy, so if you can't push and, you know, struggle and force and bring that energy to make sure things happen a certain way, you won't be safe and things won't come together. Right? So it was this message of, what's the word I'm looking for? There's a like hustle, like, you know, hustling and, you know, kind of that
Pushing.
grasping, pushing, right? Whereas I realize now that so much more happens with bringing this feminine energy of connecting. And this is funny because I never would have talked like this 10 years ago. I would have laughed at myself, you know? But now I know how solid it is. But, you know, actually stopping myself, like, am I coming from love or fear? And prioritizing connection and prioritizing seeing other people, seeing the essence of other people. And the divine, and not, you know, with this lens of, oh, you know, this judgment, which we're so conditioned to bring to everything, right? And so I think learning how to bring more of this feminine energy is so powerful.
I think it's
So,
a great parting message. Is there anything else that's coming to mind you want to share before we sign off today?
no, I loved our conversation and I loved talking to you, and
It was so
I hope
good.
there's helpful for someone out there, that's people out there listening.
Same. And thank you for the listener with sticking with us. I believe that there's so many messages here today. I know there is. And just gratitude for the listeners for coming here and exposing themselves to just new ways of talking and being in this world. It's for all of us. And so, yeah, let us know what you think, and we'll see you in the next episode. Thanks, Catherine. Thanks for listening to this episode of Mystical Sisterhood. If you love what you heard, please hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. And if it's on Apple or Spotify, I would be so grateful for a 5-star rating and review. And be sure to share with a friend if you're called to do so. To learn more about my 1-on-1 coaching programs and join the Mystical Sisterhood community, visit MaureenSpielman.com or MysticalSisterhood.com.